not any real reason for some of these providers to come to the table and want to negotiate if they're going to be paid close to bill charges anyway.
The obscure rule that could be driving up healthcare costs in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Anchorage professor who hated his name for the first half of his life and then embraced it.
And suddenly sharing the name of a celebrity was kind of fun. I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to own this.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1st, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
A world-class zinc mine operating in northwest Alaska is suing the Northwest Arctic Borough, claiming the municipality has enacted an unfair severance tax. Tech Alaska Incorporated claims the tax will double or triple payments by the Red Dog Mine to the borough. Messages left with the borough mayor's office today were not immediately returned. The company seeks a court order for borough officials to negotiate in good faith. The tax would replace a payment in lieu of taxes system set up before the borough developed a tax code. Tech Alaska paid $11.6 million to the borough in 2015. The company estimates the severance tax would increase that to as much as $40 million. Tech says the tax falls on just one taxpayer for a product sold exclusively in foreign commerce. Alaska Native Corporation NANA is the landowner where Tech Alaska is mining for zinc. In a statement on their website, NANA writes, "The corporation is concerned about the dispute and is working to bring both sides together for mediation to resolve the tax rate issue." Buried deep in the October 2004 supplement of the Alaska Administrative Code are a few sentences a lot of Alaska healthcare experts are talking about right now. It's called the 80th percentile rule. It was adopted as a consumer protection, but insurers say instead it's encouraging excessive prices for specialty care. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Imagine this. Your knee feels funny, so you make an appointment at an orthopedic clinic. The doctor isn't in your insurance network, so you know you may have to pay extra. But when you get the bill in the mail, you see your insurance covered only half the cost. The clinic expects you to pay the rest. State Insurance Director Lori Wing Heyer says more than a decade ago, Alaskans were calling the state with some version of that problem.
The division was receiving several complaints that a consumer would have their bill paid from the insurance company and then get a bill from the provider, and they were very surprised at the amount that they still owed.
So in 2004, the division adopted the 80th percentile rule. It requires insurance companies to pay 80% of the reasonable market rate for a healthcare service. On an insurance statement, you may have seen this called a UCR, for usual, customary, and reasonable rate. Insurers need to calculate that rate twice each year after surveying the market. But in Alaska, that market is small. Even in the state's largest city, Anchorage, most specialties have only one or two provider groups. Jeff Ramph is an employee benefits consultant with the company USI in Anchorage. And because the market is so small, he says the 80th percentile rule allows specialists to name a price that insurers are then required to pay.
Every year that providers continue to raise their rates, they just, all they're doing is just bumping up that 80th percentile. They're not there's nothing holding them back, in other words.
A 2011 report by the actuarial firm Milliman pointed to the 80th percentile rule as a factor driving up healthcare costs in the state. The report said Alaska is the only state in the country with this type of regulation. The largest health insurer in the state says it's time to repeal the rule. Primera Alaska wants to negotiate for lower prices with providers and increase the number of doctors in its network. But Primera Alaska President Jim Grasco says the 80th percentile rule makes that difficult.
There's not any real reason for some of these providers to come to the table and want to negotiate if they're going to be paid close to bill charges anyway. So I think it would provide an immediate, fairly high impact incentive for providers to want to contract with payers.
The two largest orthopedic clinics in Anchorage, Orthopedic Physicians Alaska and Anchorage Fracture and Orthopedic Clinic, don't contract with any insurer. They both declined to comment for this story. Dr. Stanley Watkins is president of the Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute in Anchorage. They're the only heart clinic in the city, but Watkins says they contract with Premera so patients don't have to pay out-of-network fees.
Being in network with a provider makes a huge difference for patients. And so we've been actively trying to contract with all the major insurers in Alaska.
Watkins says the Heart Institute is working to make a deal with Aetna, too. He acknowledges prices are high for specialty care in Alaska. A different 2011 Milliman report shows insurers paid almost four times as much for a cardiac stress test in Alaska compared to Washington State. Watkins says those dramatic price differences can't continue.
You know, the prices are probably going to have to go down up here.
Watkins cites a lot of reasons for the high prices. He says one big factor is the Heart Institute has to pay higher salaries to convince doctors and other providers to move to Alaska. The clinic has been trying unsuccessfully for years to recruit more cardiologists. Worries if prices are too low, specialists will leave the market and Alaskans will be forced to fly to Seattle for specialty care. But he says the Heart Institute is committed to lowering costs.
Since I've been here, it's been a thing for me to try and streamline our organization to get where, you know, we can be delivering care at just a cost of living adjustment compared to the lower 48. But we have, you know, we have ways to go, and you can't do it overnight.
Watkins acknowledges the 80th percentile rule is probably contributing to the higher prices in Alaska. Alaska's insurance director, Lori Wing-Heyer, isn't so sure, but she is open to the idea of getting rid of the regulation.
But we've got to be assured that it's the right thing to do for consumers, one, that the bills are going to be paid, and two, that it's going to not impact rates in a negative way.
Eliminating the rule wouldn't require a legislative fix. Wing-Heyer could make the change on her own after a public hearing. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Walmart announced today it's closing its Juneau location, along with 154 other stores across the country. Locally, that means about 180 people could potentially lose their jobs when the store closes next month. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Some Walmart associates found out about the news as abruptly Friday morning as everyone else. Ted Guthrie has worked at the Juneau store for about 7 months.
Mostly pushing carts, sweeping up, janitorial type work.
He saw rumors circulating around on Facebook, then he came to work.
Somebody just asked me if I'd heard, and I didn't believe it until I started reading notes around the store and seeing the vendors pulling out.
Guthrie has two kids, and he calls Walmart a good employer.
I believe it'll just cause a less than secure feeling in the community because of a store moving out, and especially a big box store.
That's Mayor Mary Becker. The chain has 13 stores in Alaska, but the Juneau location is the only one that's slated to close. Becker said a regional manager called on Friday to explain why.
He did tell me that the freight was one of the driving forces for the closure, but he also said that they were doing an evaluation of their stores nationwide.
Walmart is a major contributor to city taxes, especially sales tax. Walmart reps say the company decided to close the stores based on financial performance, the cost of doing business, and plans for strategic growth. Despite the potential layoffs, Walmart still plans to open 240 new stores in the U.S. Becker thinks better transportation could help incentivize private sector jobs.
My personal opinion is we need to put the road in so that we do have a method of getting freight up on trucks and maybe less expensive to get to Juneau.
Delia Garcia, a Walmart corporate rep, says associates who have been employed for at least a year could qualify for a 60-day severance package. First, the company will try to find transfer opportunities.
Juneau is in a unique circumstance in that there aren't other Walmarts relatively close by as you might find in other locations that are being closed. And that's why we want to make sure that associates are prepared for potential opportunities elsewhere.
But for Ted Guthrie, transferring to another Walmart isn't something he can do.
No, because my family is established here in Juneau. We don't plan on moving anywhere. So I'll just be looking for another job, I guess.
Nationally, the Walmart closures could affect about 10,000 employees. The Juneau store will close its doors by February 5th. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, last year's champion talks about his game plan for the K300.
There's not a lot of strategy in this race just because there's so little rest. So I think just managing the team's speed is probably the only strategy.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
And by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
The city of Homer is trying to kick out campers at an unofficial campsite on the Homer Spit. Police are telling people living in a parking lot beside the Seafarers Memorial to move to an official campground down the road. KBBI's Quinton Chandler spoke with one camper who is willing to move, but he has one request.
Ken Boyle is smoking a cigarette and listening to talk radio in his tiny camper powered by a borrowed gas generator. The camper sits in the back of his pickup truck. Boyle is camping beside the Seafarers Memorial dedicated to people who lost their lives at sea. He says he's a retired carpenter and was living in Happy Valley before he drove the 30-odd miles south to Homer.
I lived on a boat in the harbor for 12 years, so I kind of like it here.
Last spring and summer, he was camped at the city's seasonal campground beside Pier 1 Theater, but he moved after the campground closed for the winter. Now Boyle will have to move again. The city reopened its campground and is ordering all campers in the parking lot to leave. Homer Police Chief Mark Robel says the memorial parking lot was never intended for long-term camping.
There is a city ordinance that authorizes some camping in that parking lot when all the other campgrounds are closed.
The city's normal rules don't apply to the parking lot because it's not an official campground. Robel says people were camping there too long.
We had several people move into that parking lot and set up, and they were clearly there for the winter. Some of them towed different campers in different states of disrepair, and it was getting to be a big mess.
Police arrested some campers, and Chief Robel says a few even put the parking lot down as their home address. The Homer City Manager reopened the campground near Pier 1 Theater earlier this winter so police could clear out the parking lot. According to city code, an official campground can only be used for 14 days before campers have to leave. City officials say it is $8 per day to camp in a tent and $15 to camp in RV, but those prices could change. Robel says the rules and fees will help with an annual problem.
At the end of the winter, we end up having to tow several of these derelicts away and take them to the dump. And this past spring, that got to be pretty expensive. We had several vehicles and campers out there that we had to deal with. So we're trying to avoid that problem in the future.
Robel says police told parking lot campers they had to move back in December. Ken Boyle has just one problem with that. He says the public bathrooms at the authorized campground are closed for the winter.
The police showed up, and I told them if they opened up the bathroom over there, I'd light this truck up and go over there. And he said he'd research it.
Boyle says he has bad legs, and the bathrooms closest to the campground are too far away. Robel says the bathrooms Boyle once opened are closed because they weren't designed for winter use, and it would cost too much to heat them. Still, Boyle has made up his mind.
It's obvious. Open the bathroom and I'll move.
Boyle says at the unofficial campsite, he is closer to a bathroom. Robel says police don't want to arrest anyone slow to change campsites. Instead, they're going to try to nudge campers into moving first. He says police have seen about 4 people leave the parking lot and there are around 10 campers left. In Homer, I'm Quinton Chandler.
25 mushers, some local, some international, but all prepared to race this evening along icy river trails, are in Bethel for the Kuskokwim 300. The race starts tonight at 6:30 p.m. It's the longest of 3 races that'll take place over the weekend. KYUK's Lakhidra Chavis reports.
Last year's champion, Pete Kaiser, is competing again this year. Kaiser was the first local musher in more than 30 years to win the race.
There's not a lot of strategy in this race just because there's so little rest. So I think just managing the team's speed is probably the only strategy. I'll be looking to go slower probably the first part of the race and try to manage their gas tank throughout the whole way.
Due to icy trails from warmer weather in the past few weeks, this year's K300 race will start and finish with the first and last 50 miles on tundra trails. Kaiser flew his dogs up to Fairbanks to practice last week and says he hopes the efforts were worth it. And he's not the only musher focusing on pace during the start.
Trying to slow the dogs down on the ice, which is going to be a challenge.
That's Brenda Mackey. She's a lifelong dog musher and a former Yukon Quest competitor. This is her first year racing the K300.
My goal is to not go too fast to the first checkpoint of Kalskag. And I think that that's going to be a challenge to do on the ice. So we'll see.
Roan Boozer, who finished second last year by 13 minutes and first the year before, says this year's trail is ideal.
Last year I won. That was the trail we took, so it's kind of exciting. I know that trail pretty well.
Race officials say this year's winner will receive at least $25,000, and the race will run about 280 miles, with checkpoints in Tulixac, Kalskag, Aniak, and back. And aside from the K300 this weekend, other mushers will compete in the Bogus Creek 150 and the shortest race, the Akiak Dash, at roughly 50 miles. Reporting in Bethel, I'm Lakitra Chavis.
The dog that led Brent Sass to victory in last year's Yukon Quest has died unexpectedly. KUAC's Amanda Frank reports Sass is coping with the loss as he prepares to start the K300.
Brent Sass's lead dog, Basin, died earlier this week. Sass was in a remote area and wasn't sure what happened to the five-year-old dog.
I mean, I left the dogs camping just like I always do, and when we came back down to the dogs, something definitely happened. Like, he had gotten sick and was not in a good way, and it went downhill fast.
The area they were in was so remote that they weren't able to bring Basin to a veterinarian.
We had to do as much as we could. We gave him fluids and warmed him up and put him in the cabin and did all we could to try and get him warmed up, but we couldn't do it. We did all we could, given the circumstances.
Basin's death is a huge loss to the team, which will now number at 18 dogs for the race. Sass said only time will tell how the healing process will be for his dogs.
We're all still in the grieving process, and when we get out on the trail, time will tell, you know. But I think it's going to be a healing process. Whether it makes us go fast or slow, I think I'm going to find out when I get out there.
25 mushers from all over Alaska and Canada picked up their bibs for the race, which starts this evening at 6:30. Racers are expected to arrive at the finish line in Bethel this Sunday. In Bethel, I'm Amanda Frank.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
From Ketchikan to Kotzebue, Alaskan lives are salmon lives. Join the Salmon Project this winter as they learn how Alaskans from every corner of the state live lives full of salmon. Learn more at salmonproject.org. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Happy New Year! Start the year off right by filing your 2016 PFD application. Don't forget to sign your application electronically or by printing a signature page. The deadline to apply is Thursday, March 31st, 2016. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Matt Miller. This week on AK, David Bowie, professor. For one Alaskan, David Bowie's death is, let's just say, a bit complicated. UAA linguistics professor David Bowie, spelled B-O-W-I-E, has a vexed relationship with the musician he shares his name with. Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes spoke to him about how he went from resenting the musician as a teenager to owning the celebrity name as an adult.
Like a lot of 15-year-olds growing up in Connecticut, there was a stretch of time where I was obsessed with David Bowie. Time takes a cigarette. After the singer's death, I was curious if he'd ever come to Alaska, but I got sidetracked when Google informed me that there is a different David Bowie, still living very close by, and in fact, extremely receptive to a telephone call out of the blue.
Like I tell my students every semester, I don't expect you to end up pronouncing my name right. It's fine. I will answer to either. But just so that you know, it's Bowie.
Bowie studies language, particularly the subtle regional differences that shape vowels, like that O in the middle of his name. That's an alphabetic anomaly that's particular to his upbringing in southern Maryland.
In most of the United States, it's Bowie. But in Maryland and eastern and central Texas, it's Bowie.
Even given that, not everyone is so observant of regional differences and vowel sounds.
The first name kind of primes the pronunciation of the last name. You see David, and then you see something spelled B-O-W-I-E. It must be Bowie.
Besides that name, Bowie bears little resemblance to Bowie. He's 45, has glasses and spiky brown hair, and is wearing a silver bow tie. The floor of his office is covered with collapsed heaps of linguistics books. He was born in 1970, just on the cusp of the English singer's rise to American fame. Bowie says his parents weren't hip enough to even know that they were consigning their son to a difficult few decades of jokes, chuckles, chortles, jests, and I presume a good amount of bullying, too.
You know, to share the name of a bisexual rock star when you're going to a semi-rural southern high school isn't really the most comfortable thing in the world.
Bowie didn't listen to the music, even resented it a little bit. He was going to change his name at 18, but then, like many young Americans, his identity flipped when he got to college.
And suddenly sharing the name of a celebrity was kind of fun. I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to own this.
Not only did he start listening to Bowie, he started caring, developing opinions on whole albums and eras of the performer's career.
Which is my favorite Bowie period? I think it changes. Absolutely no pun intended.
Bowie studied linguistics in college. The way that he tells it was sort of an arbitrary decision that gradually morphed into an academic career. By graduate school, he was drawn to the ways that dialects differ within religious communities.
Looking at actually Amish teenagers when they do the Rumspringazeit, where they go out into the community, and looking what happens linguistically.
That project never quite materialized, but the line of inquiry brought him to Utah, then Florida, and eventually Alaska. Since then, he's developed an interest in how English has transformed in a place that it's really only existed for about a century.
There's a few scattered things here and there, but very little really on Alaskan English, and vanishingly little on pronunciation, which is my focus.
His dream is to one day have a dialect atlas for Alaska, something that could take decades or even outlast him. It would map the local nuances of speech, lexical differences like snow machine versus snowgo, or who uses the long and yupik inflected A sound as an onuktuvik pass. Bowie's passion is finding the subtleties of speech that communicate more than just their surface meaning, the distinction between language and grammar that he first encountered inside a linguistics textbook.
People have these rules that they've come up with and that they say are really important. But really what's going on is people are actually using a system. People are using an actual system of language, and that system includes split infinitives. That system includes sentences ending with prepositions. And that system is what we use to express ourselves and to be able to communicate with each other. And if people are communicating with each other successfully, who cares if they follow your dumb rules?
Bowie, like Bowie, is a bit of a rule breaker, albeit with phonemes and syntax rather than genre and gender bending. He cares deeply about sound, less for the technical specifics of a sentence or a consonant or a song note than the effect that it has on the listener.
At some level, I just kind of enjoy music to match a mood. I mean, right immediately before we had this interview, I switched Pandora on and I was listening to very, very angry old school rap because that really worked for the moment.
And in that, Bowie is maybe just one little vowel sound away from a performer who always aimed to leave an impression. Oh no, love, you're not alone. On Mars, I'm Zachary.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we're hearing from Roger Sparks, a pararescue man with the Alaska Air National Guard. 5 years ago, Sparks was involved in a heavy firefight in the mountains of Afghanistan. What happened after that changed his life.
It was the most intense combat that I'd ever experienced. You know, to be in that environment is over an 8-day period and be in that headspace and land completely, literally blood and brain and stained to going in and seeing pictures of my wife and kids and just uncontrollably breaking down, crying, and then a knock on the door. And there was three gentlemen there that wanted to create a video about the romance of combat and tattooing. I just wanted to be part of what they were doing. They basically tattooed us for 3 days. Surreal. You know, to have someone tattooing you like that in those moments was the absolute best form of therapy that could have happened. I think it was about a year after the events, I still could not shake the healing effects that the tattooing had. And I basically started tattooing myself. A lot of the guys that I tattoo are almost solely, it's all pararescuemen that I work with. And I know that in some subconscious way, I'm attempting to recreate that healing effect from just the collective damage that we take in the job that we do.
Roger Sparks is a pararescue man with the Alaska Air National Guard. His story is featured on this week's Indie Alaska. And to see the video, go to alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Zachariah Hughes, Casey Ellingson, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Matt Miller.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Quentin Chandler in Homer, Lakita Chavis in Bethel, and Amanda Frank in Fairbanks. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Gokey is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
the 2016 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience. Through their engaging staff and faculty, APU's education is designed to broaden and deepen their students' potential through action and understanding. #ThisIsOurClassroom. This message sponsored by APU.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.